there's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing!
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed...
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, Open Floor Globe? This is Ben Golliver with the Washington Post, and I am joined on the other line by Michael the Pod Pina, who covers the NBA, drumroll please, for Sports Illustrated. Michael, do you have a new job? Did I hear that right?
You did hear it right, yes. I guess we're kind of breaking some news on the podcast because I haven't even tweeted about this or anything yet, but you kind of bullied me.
Take that, Shams. What you got now? All right. Tell me more.
Yeah, you kind of bullied me into talking about it at the top of this episode. But yeah, I'm starting full time at SI covering the NBA, continuing to do this podcast, of course, 2 times a week. And starting on January 1st, 2021. So very excited. And thank you to you for even just, you know, folding me into this podcast, which led to this wonderful news.
Hey, the news is absolutely sensational. It's an awesome fit. I saw it in my mind's eye for months and months away, and it all came together brilliantly. I think it makes sense. New season. And, you know, we've been talking how you're kind of right in the mix and in the thick of things there in Brooklyn, man. The Nets stealing headlines for the first week, so I think it makes sense for everybody. I hope you're on Kyrie watch and KD watch and following those guys around the streets of Flatbush and Fulton and having a great time. I think it's going to be awesome. You're going to have the chance to write, you know, long-form features for the magazine, online columns, which you're great at, the analysis stuff, all of it, perfect fit. And the best part is you get to keep... you know, listening to me yell at you twice a week for no good reason on this podcast. So hopefully the Open Floor Globe members can send you some congratulations on Twitter and by email. I am super, super stoked that it all worked out. You're going to be starting at SI. So I hadn't even planned this as a tribute, Michael, but we're going to just call this the Michael V. Pina tribute podcast here because I wanted your playoff picks. I wanted Pina's playoff picks. And we spent a lot of time talking about the contenders, obviously, on this show. But what I want to do on this particular episode is dig into sort of the playoff bubble races in both rounds. Now, of course, this year it's going to be a little bit different. They have the typical 8 playoff teams, but there's also going to be the play-in round at 9 and 10, where those teams are going to be able to have the opportunity to sneak in. What I want to know, Michael, from you really is which are going to be the last 3 teams in the playoffs from each of the conferences, and then the first 3 teams that are going to miss out. So which of these teams are going to be in that kind of play-in mix, trying to you know, get themselves into the playoffs as we get down the stretch? I think when you're looking at a year that has no home court advantage, this is probably or arguably a more important topic of conversation than in a typical year, but also just more interesting because we kind of can pencil in, you know, four or five, maybe six teams from each conference who are going to make the playoffs. But it's really about who are they going to face and potentially which of those teams can pull upsets once we get there. So I want to start in the Western Conference, the Western Conference, as everyone knows. I want to know your 6, 7, and 8 playoff seeds in the West. Just give them to me real quick here.
So 6, I have the Houston Rockets, 7, Golden State Warriors, 8, Phoenix Suns.
And then give me your 9, 10, 11. In other words, the three teams that are going to be just on the outside looking in.
Sure. So I have 9, the Dallas Mavericks, 10, the New Orleans Pelicans, and 11, the Minnesota Timberwolves.
Okay, awesome, Michael. So we've actually debated back and forth quite a bit about your number 6 seed, Houston. I know that the Rockets fans were elated with John Wall's debut, and they may be a little bit sad about game number 2 there after they take a hard loss to the Chicago Bulls. What is the key factor that gives you confidence they're going to be able to remain a playoff team? And actually, with the 6 seed, I mean, it sounds like they're getting in comfortably in your eyes. What do you see as the straw that stirs their drink? Is it Harden just deciding, you know what, put all the anger and unhappiness behind me, I'm going to go out there and hoop, or what is it?
I am stubbornly, potentially, naively believing that Harden will stay in Houston for this entire season. That obviously might not happen, and it might be possible that they will trade him before the trade deadline. It seems like, you know, there are only a couple destinations that have the picks and the assets and the players that could actually swing a trade, and right now those teams don't seem very interested. A lot can change overnight. It's the NBA. Right now, though, I'm believing that Harden will, you know, there was a report that he will be professionally engaged with the Houston Rockets until he is dealt. He still wants to be traded. But, you know, I think like if they play well and he's surrounded by, you know, Boogie Cousins has looked really good physically in the 2 preseason games. John Wall has looked really like his old self in a lot of ways physically. If those two who have a combined like 9 or 10 all-star appearances between them, if they're playing great, Christian Wood gets into the fold, PJ Tucker, Eric Gordon, like Harden, you know, he wants to win, right? If winning is what he wants, this could be a better situation than anyone that he gets traded to be honest with you. So I'm believing that Harden will, you know, look around, and after spending every day with guys that he respects, like Boogie and like John Wall in particular, like it could be hard for him to want to walk away from that.
I love this beautiful alternate reality that you paint, Michael. I mean, Woj reported this morning that, you know, he's not necessarily moved by the partnership between himself and John Wall. You know, we'll see how well those guys hold up. John Wall looked really good in his first game. Mm-hmm. I'm definitely going to give him that. And he looked like he had his explosion back. I think both he and Kevin Durant probably exceeded expectations for their first games back, you know, first times on the court after the Achilles. So that's great. But you want to see it every single night. You want to see that consistency factor. I do not have Houston in the playoffs. I think that it's what you're hitting on. You're hoping for good chemistry. I'm banking on bad chemistry. I think they've just, you know, it's just a ticking time bomb, and we'll see how it plays out. But you've got Golden State at 7, and we haven't talked about them quite as much. So it sounds like you're confident Steph Curry is going to stay healthy, I imagine. You're confident mm-hmm. he's going to be able to have a transformative impact. Are you sure they're getting into the playoffs this year? Because I'm not sure they're getting in. I'm worried about their depth. I'm worried about their lack of shooting. I'm worried about their front court depth, specifically on the defensive end. Even if Draymond is himself, who else is playing defense for them? I think you're really going to have to count on Looney, and that to me is a question mark at this point. And so I don't know. Like, are they going to be able to stop anybody? Is it just going to be a shootout? And if it's a shootout every night, do they have enough guns, right? I mean, I don't see a ton of shooting there. Are you still assuming Wiggins is going to be the savior, or how does this play out?
You know, you started at the top saying that you weren't sure that they would make the playoffs. I mean, I'm not sure that they'll make the playoffs either. Like, the Western Conference is a total bloodbath once again. But I'm just trying to put some respect on Steph Curry's name coming into the season. And, like, the amount of praise that we give to some of the other superstar caliber players in this league, where just because they're on a team, that team can make the playoffs. Like, that's how I still view Steph Curry. I mean, we're only a couple of years removed from him being considered one of the best, if not the best player, offensive players in the entire world.
So stop there right now. Where is he in your personal rankings? I'm doing my top 100 exercise right now for the Washington Post. I think by default, I'm kind of with you. I want to make sure he's the number one point guard. You know, Damian Lillard's coming after him pretty quickly, mm-hmm. but I would still default to Steph. Would you have Steph as your number one point guard?
I think I would, yes. I think I would. I'd have him over. I mean, Dame is, you know, what he did in the bubble was miraculous. And I think he's been kind of viewed as Steph Curry light for his entire prime. And like you said, I think he's coming up real fast. But I just, you know, I think Steph Curry still has a lot left in the tank. And this season, I think his usage will be way up, being that he needs to carry this offense in a lot of different ways. Different ways than he has in the past, for sure, being more on ball. I think his numbers will be great. And, you know, I think this supporting cast is a little, I mean, it is thin for sure, but I'm looking at someone like Wiseman. I'm looking at Kevon Looney. I'm looking at Marquese Chriss. I think their front court rotation is pretty dynamic, if not competent. And then you just have a lot of athleticism on the wing, which is something that they haven't had too much of in the past. So I like them playing super fast. You're right, the defense is a huge question mark. I imagine them just outgunning teams on a night-to-night basis.
Dynamic, if not competent. They've got athletes whose heads are going to be spinning, I guess, is where you're going with that one.
Yes.
Okay, so Curry or Harden, and then Curry or Luka?
Oh, wow. What a question.
I'm throwing you on the spot right now, but I think that you opened here by saying, let's put some respect on Curry's name. So if we're going to do that, I mean, I'm taking Curry over Harden. And I think at this point, I'm still going to give Curry the benefit of the doubt over Luka. But to me, this season is it's a pivot point of his career, right? If you're injured, I usually give guys a pass, especially if it's not a significant injury in these kinds of rankings. I don't want them to lose their spot just because, of one injury, unless there's some obvious, you know, career-altering trajectory to it, I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt, right? And Curry's heights, as you described, you know, two MVPs, five finals, three titles. I mean, that's stuff that none of these guys have even come close to, but it's getting closer, and he's got to reprove it. And if he has another injury-ravaged season again this year, he's not going to get the benefit of the doubt next year. That's sort of how I view it. But would you still have Curry over Harden and Luka?
I've always thought that I've always kind of pit Curry as like right on par with Harden. And I've always had a really difficult time kind of picking between the two, just because, I mean, you know, Harden has led the league in scoring three times. He gets to the line a lot, and he's also a capable outside shooter, just an offense unto himself in a different kind of way. So I just have a really difficult time parsing those two guys, but I will take Steph over Luka heading into this season by a hair.
It sounds to me like you want to put Harden over Steph, and you don't want to pull the trigger here because you're worried I'm going to flip out and say, come on, man, don't you value winning and everything else? Who would you rather play with? Doesn't that factor in this conversation?
If I was good enough to be in the NBA, I would rather play with Steph, yeah,
okay.
Than almost
right.
Like any player in the league. Yeah, no, for sure.
Okay, so you know the right answer. You just love Harden. That's your fatal flaw here. Okay, well, it's close. I think that's kind of the point here. You can have some real debates, and if we go back to 2016, I don't think that there was a lot of debates about that, right? It was sort of, you know, Curry's got the craziest plus minus. He's got the biggest impact, and so that's why it's sort of a prove it year. I think he's just dragging a lot of pieces with this group. And I think his health gets a lot of attention, but I also think Draymond's health gets a lot of attention too. I mean, what does their front line look like if he misses time, you know? And he's getting a little bit up there. I understand, okay, Wiseman, you can kind of sneak him in as a center next to Draymond and hope that you can get by, right? Or same deal with Chris. You kind of try to use him, spot minutes here and there, and just kind of close your eyes and pray. And he's made some progress since earlier in his career, for sure. I mean, he was fouling guys every 30 seconds when he was in Phoenix, so I guess we can call that progress. It's not that bad anymore. But if those guys are the ones who are in charge of the shop when Draymond's injured, I mean, come on. That's not going to work out very well, right?
No, but I just want to say, like, you know, I see a lot of criticism of Wiggins and of, you know, Kelly Oubre is not Klay Thompson, obviously, and they signed Kent Bazemore to the veteran minimum, and, you know, what is Kent Bazemore at this point? But, like, the way I see it is just when you're on a team with, like, contextually, when you're on a team with such smart, capable players like Steph and Draymond, like, your role is more clearly defined, and life just becomes a little bit easier for you. Like, the attention that will be drawn by Steph, the attention that Draymond will draw pushing the ball in transition and finding open shooters behind the three-point line, like, the looks will just be different. And I do think, like, I don't know if you agree with me, but I feel like last year was a total fluke. And when I say last year, I mean like the first four games before Curry got injured, when they were just getting blown out left and right. I feel like, you know, that season began like right after five straight finals runs, when it's clear that they were running on fumes. It's clear that they just weren't going to win the championship that year. They didn't have Klay, and they were all exhausted. So I feel like that beginning of last season is a bad taste in a lot of people's mouths, and I'm not really factoring it in too much or as much as other people.
They were also taking emotional gut punches, right, of not having guys out there. I mean, it must have been so disorienting at the start of last year not to have Klay Thompson for basically the first time ever. I mean, it's kind of like the Iron Man for them, right? Obviously, everything changes when you're taking away a Kevin Durant-type player for them at the beginning of the last year. And they're in a new building, so that must have been weird as well. Yeah, I don't focus so much on those first four games. I just focus on, like, how many of these guys can you really rely on night to night? And I think there's also the question of, okay, now Steph almost has to get put into this Harden or LeBron-like role where he does have to have a higher usage. He does have to sort of, you know, solve all sorts of different problems, and he has to cover up for weaker teammates, and he's just got to, you know, constantly just set the table for an Andrew Wiggins and pray that he eventually can kind of make his shots, you know? And I think from Golden State standpoint, that's just a different formula, a different approach than what they use to win tons and tons of games. And then I also worry that, okay, if you're trying to carry that type of workload in your Steph, you know, fluky things can happen here and there, whether it's the ankles or the hand last year. And, you know, just from a physical standpoint, is he going to be able to hold up? And, you know, even things like how many back-to-backs do you want to play Steph on at this point of his career, right? I mean, I don't see them as a title team this year. I would be pretty conservative if I was Golden State about kind of limiting his minutes and being careful. And I just think any time that Steph's not on the court, these guys are getting absolutely blitzed. So I think you add all that up, it's enough red flag cautions for me to say these guys are probably – you've got them close to where I would have them, but I could also see them slip into like ninth and just being barely on the outside looking in. All right, give me your number eight team in the West again.
Phoenix Suns.
Didn't you have them higher, Michael? I thought you told me they were going to be like a five seed. Did you come to your senses or what happened there?
You know, I'm getting realistic here. Now I'm sitting down. The season is starting. We're seeing preseason games. Like now it's the nitty gritty time. So now I have to get real serious with my predictions here.
So what made you flinch, for lack of a better term? What made you say, all right, I need to put the Kool-Aid down and come back to earth a little bit?
So, yeah, I still am really high on Phoenix. I'm still really high on a lot of their offseason moves. I love adding Chris Paul here. I love the fit in a lot of ways with him and Devin Booker. I think, like, one of the reasons why I dropped them to eighth is that I looked at the schedule, and Phoenix has nine back-to-backs, which is the most of any team that has playoff expectations heading into this season. So I think that if you have a player who's really important like Chris Paul, who was in the bubble, who's just really had, you know, arguably the most stressful season slash year just as a person in the NBA, given all of his off-court responsibilities, like, I wonder how many of those games they're going to play him. He did not play in their preseason opener due to rest. And, you know, Chris Paul was like a borderline MVP candidate last season, and they're expecting big things out of him this year. So if he's kind of out of the picture, I do still like Phoenix a lot. I still like Devin Booker running pick and roll with DeAndre Ayton. I like Mikal Bridges and the step forwards that he's going to make. I like the Jay Crowder signing a ton for them and how it lets them play small. But like without Chris Paul in the West, it's like that's just, you know, that's not that's probably not a playoff team. So I'm hedging a little bit with the Chris Paul age and the schedule here a little bit, but I still like them a lot.
I think that's smart. I see two big drop-offs for them. Chris Paul to like Cameron Payne, you know, or whoever else they're going to have as their backup point guard. Yeah. That's just massive, right? So anytime he's out, that's going to be an issue. I mean, I also think DeAndre Ayton to, you know, their backup five, whether they're playing Saric there or the rookie Jalen Smith or whoever it is, that's also a huge steep drop. And Ayton, to me, I mean, he's got something to prove here from a consistency standpoint. Can he be out there on the court? And then, you know, he got banged up with ankles and stuff like that last year and missed some time. They just need him to play. They don't have Baines anymore. And so I think that both those spots, they're just, you know, key spots where if their best five is healthy, they're going to run some teams off the court with this group. And they've got enough depth, especially if Chris Paul is healthy, they're going to be solid. I mean, they got eight guys who can play, right? But if Paul misses time or Ayton misses some time or, you know, does whatever their goofy stuff he sometimes does, they're going to be a completely different team. I see them right around where you see them. I could see them actually being a little bit higher, maybe a 7 seed. And I just hope that Chris Paul does stay healthy, and I hope he's ready to rock, and I hope that the amazing diet he's been on, I'm not sure if you've seen pictures of him. I mean, he looks skinny compared to even earlier in his career, so hopefully that helps him age well and they get this positive momentum that they're expecting. I do worry that they've got their hopes up a lot down there, especially the players. I mean, Booker sounding so optimistic, so positive. You know, you just worry, what happens if there's some early adversity? How do they respond to it? This franchise has never responded to adversity that well over the last 10 years. And so, you know, I kind of hope for their sake that they're able to avoid that and get out of the gate fast so they can say, hey, we're carrying over this momentum from the bubble. Because if not, they're going to be looking around saying, well, wait a minute, who are we? Are we still the same team that just can't get it done? And then, you know, it kind of spirals from there potentially. All right. So the teams you have left out, I actually think Dallas is your biggest snub here from the playoffs. They're going to be a playoff team, Michael. I understand what you're trying to say about they don't have enough depth. I went back and looked because you made me think twice. They're pretty much as deep as they were last year. They're definitely more balanced offense and defense. They've got, you know, a top six or seven guy in Luka. All their role players fit into their roles quite well. And then Porzingis, he's the X factor, but he's not going to miss the whole season with a meniscus tear. And I think that Luka can do a pretty darn good job of carrying the team without him. So other than an injury to Luka, I don't see what the case is for this to be a 9 seed.
I mean, we went pretty in depth on this with your entertainment rankings. You know, I think that you hit the nail on the head with Kristaps Porzingis being the X factor here. And if he was 100% healthy, I would not be so hesitant. But I just feel like as good as Luka is, I look at the rest of the roster and I don't see anyone else who is, you know, Rick Carlisle is really good at kind of like jiggering good offense out of players who probably have no business coordinating good offense. And Jalen Brunson's going to be back and healthy, and Trey Burke's there. And, you know, we'll see what they get with some of the rookies. But, like, I don't know, man. Like, I look at those closing five lineups, and the offense was really bad last year, whether KP played or didn't play. And in those games when KP is not available in the unforgiving Western Conference, like, what is their closing five? You have Luka, Josh Richardson, Tim Hardaway Jr., Dorian Finney-Smith, and then, like, Maxi Kleber or Dwight Powell. Like, I'm not terrified of that group at all. And when Luka sits, I mentioned Jalen Brunson and Trey Burke before, but, like, is that going to be good enough on offense? And is there really going to be enough balance where they're able to up the defense without sacrificing too much of the spacing that they had last year when they had the best offense of all time? That's just, you know, like, it is just really slim margins here with Dallas. I could obviously see them making the playoffs. A lot of people really are high on them, and deservedly so, because Luka is a miracle, but I can't get there. I just can't.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the fact that Hardaway can create his own offense a little bit and score in bunches when you need help. So I think that Luka was actually their late game problem to me a lot last year. I mean, just he was a little bit too erratic. I think that he's made some strides there. He falls in love with the hero ball shot. I think that that's definitely a weakness. And he puts on a little bit too much of a show late in games, right? He gets into this idea of like, I want to be a circus entertainer and just do like the craziest possible thing. It's like, bro, just chill out, run the offense. You guys are going to get a good shot if you do that. I think he's making strides. I'm just betting on him being way better than last year too. I think that he's still in that situation where he is in rapid improvement mode. And there aren't good answers for him. He's so physical on the ball. He's so tricky. He can get himself to the free throw line when he needs to. And he can set up a drive and kick three on basically any possession. They've got plenty of guys to hit it.
Can I interrupt you for 1 second real quick about Luka's progress? Because one of the things that I haven't really seen mentioned too much in general is just like, you know, this isn't a normal offseason. Like, how much better, honestly, can we expect these players to be from the bubble to now? Like, this goes for just about every young player. Because I honestly feel like the leap that he made that was notable was from the end of the last regular season, when the season was stopped in March, to the bubble. Do you kind of see where I'm coming from? Do you kind of agree with that point?
I do. Have you ever seen a triple jumper? You know, from the Olympics?
Yes.
Yeah, so Luka is triple jumping through life. It's just not, he's not stopping at three. He's just taking leaps every year since he's like 12 years old. I mean, the guy is an absolute freaking basketball prodigy. I mean, he's so much better than he was as a rookie. He was so much better in year two. He was so much better in the bubble than he was in year two. And he's going to come back, and I think he's going to be better in year three as well. I'm with you, though. It's a strange timeline. You don't know exactly when guys are going to make the jump. We actually saw some players, I thought, make a pretty big jump heading into the bubble, even bigger than I thought. A Ja Morant, you know, that was one where I was like, whoa, now this guy looks different even than he did in March. And you're going to have some players who haven't played since March who better make a leap, Michael. You know,
if
you're Trae Young and you don't come back, you know, significantly sturdier on defense and taking advantage of these options around you, and then we're going to start to say, well, like, wait a minute, what's been going on here for the last 9 months? I mean, the Bulls prospects, Lauri Markkanen coming back shooting 1-for-10 on threes after 9 months off is a woof. You know, I mean, that is rough. And you don't want to judge him based off one preseason game for sure, but that's another type of player we better see a big jump from after all that time off, right? So I'm more just banking on the idea that Luka is on a straight ascent up a mountain, and it doesn't really matter when you start or stop the clock. He's just continuing to improve. Eventually that will, you know, he'll hit his peak, but I think he's so young, he's just not there yet. Same deal with Tatum, by the way. He had an even shorter offseason than Luka. I'm expecting him to come back and take another step forward, and I'm not even referring to these reports about his height, which apparently he's got Giannis syndrome and just grows now to 6'10 while he's an NBA player into his 20s. Have no idea where that's coming from, but it is certainly terrifying for all the green beer haters out there, like myself.
There are some things that are too good to keep a secret, like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith. When I'm not at my day job, First Take, you can find me in my studio hosting the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, at the very least, as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports,
pop culture, business, and politics. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions on those nauseating cowboy fans, the chaos in Washington, D.C., and trending topics on social media, as well as my straight shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers. And I occasionally give out love advice. Yes, it's true. If you want to know my true feelings about something, I'll give it to you straight. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
All right, Michael, we've talked about Dallas quite a bit. I just want to point out, I'm buying Josh Richardson's stock. I think it was a terrible fit last year. I think he's going to be their X factor. I think his shooting is going to be enough on offense. I think his defense is going to be really important. If I'm proven wrong there, things could go sideways, but I have a feeling you are going to regret your Mavericks pick in about, I would say, 2.5 weeks. let's talk about the New Orleans Pelicans, though. They are fascinating, man. So you've got them out of the playoffs, and I've actually seen some people wonder, are they going to be even worse than you have them? What is your cause for optimism on them? In other words, why are you not having them down sort of where they finished? I think it was like 13th last year. What's causing you to just believe in them being better, but then also what's holding them back from a playoff spot?
Yeah, so I mean, right off the top, like, I like Alvin Gentry as a head coach. I do think that going to Stan Van Gundy, particularly with what they want to do on the defensive end, was probably a noticeable upgrade there. So, like, you know, some of the young players in New Orleans have talked about how practices were 45 minutes last season, and this year so far they're like two hours, three hours long with Stan Van Gundy. So
it showed in the bubble, didn't it, Michael? Not a lot of discipline.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
didn't really seem like they knew what they were doing, and they had some guys who weren't in shape.
Right. So, look, the photos of Zion are like succulent. Like, this guy is just cut, ripped, no minutes restriction. He's foaming at the mouth, looking to play 30 plus minutes a night. Like, I'm all in on Zion in year two of his career, based on what those on-off numbers look like before the bubble, when he was just transformative. And I love Ingram. I know we talk about Ingram and we kind of are a little bit, he's a divisive figure between you and I on this podcast. I'm really high on him. I really like his game. I'm looking forward to seeing the Ingram Zion pick and roll.
So let me ask you there. You've got two stars in Zion and Ingram, and you've got competent players in Adams, you know, starting caliber center.
Yeah.
Eric Bledsoe, starting caliber point guard. And then Lonzo Ball, you know, same kind of category as an off guard to me. Josh Hart's competent. Redick is more than competent. Why are these guys a playoff team if they've got two stars enough supporting pieces around them? What's holding them back?
You just literally named everybody on the roster who is competent as a baseline. Like, everybody else is just a big question mark, right? So if you have seven guys on your roster who are pretty good and one of them or two of them gets hurt or one of them gets COVID, heaven forbid, like, that's a big drop off for this team, I think. And, you know, there's been a lot made of how successful they were in transition versus the half court on offense last season. And there's just also not a lot of shooting on this roster still. And they lose Drew Holiday, who was obviously important for transparent reasons. So I just think they're thin. I think they don't have enough shooting. But at the same time, like, I'm very interested to see just how powerful Zion looks, how much better Ingram looks. You know, I mentioned before the Ingram Zion pick and rolls, and one of the really interesting things you can do there, or that Ingram allows you to do, is he can hit those tough mid-range pull-ups that are contested even when they're well defended, and the floor is a little scrunched. So I'm high on all that, but at the same time, the West is just too much for a team that's this young, led by two inexperienced players who have no like playoff chops at all. But I love the talent. So I'm giving them the 10 seed.
Yeah, I think they're definitely better than a team like Minnesota. It's just too young, and you've got Minnesota at 11. I think that's maybe even too high for Minnesota. I think they're definitely better than a Sacramento. I think they're better from a talent perspective at this point than a San Antonio. So I think you've got them pretty close to right. I mean, would you be shocked if they made the playoffs? There's an upside there, right? I mean, I think that, you know, the advanced stat guys would say the Pelicans consistently fell short of their preseason win-loss projections during the Alvin Gentry tenure, and that's sort of their polite way of saying, you know, Gentry might not have been that good of a coach or didn't exactly get the most out of his group. Is it possible that Stan is worth, you know, 4 or 5 win bonus and all of a sudden they're clicking?
I think it's possible. I think way more important here is if Zion stays healthy and you can play him 33 minutes a night, and you can play him a little bit at the five, you can play him just as this, you know, play him with Adams and those two have success together on the glass, just overpowering everybody. Like, I think that that is way more valuable than the head coach, but the head coach does matter, and I want to see how much better they are on the defensive end and how much more disciplined they are on that side of the ball as well.
The NBA and the TV schedule makers are going to be upset if these guys don't make the play-in round, right? I mean, should we just call the... This is the second time they're going with the play-in round. It does feel like we've got to do whatever we possibly can to get Zion into one of these games so we can pray that he makes the playoffs somehow. Honestly, it's pretty transparent by them, but I can't really blame them. He has that kind of magnetism, and he's fun to watch, like you've described. I think I'm actually falling in line right with you on the Pelicans. I think they're going to be just short. Hopefully, they make the play-in round, so we get to see at least one game from them. Maybe they can shock the world and kind of atone for their poor bubble performance, and that would be a kind of a win for everybody. Minnesota at 11 is too high, Michael. It's not going to happen. I don't know where... Where are you coming from with that one?
Mostly intrigue. Like, I understand that their defense is going to be pretty terrible. I think that it's possible that Karl Anthony Towns enters the season. You know, we talked about players who were not in the bubble, who you know, the short off season for players who were in the bubble not being able to kind of improve and make leaps. I think that Karl Anthony Towns is one of the more talented players at his position, and for him not to have played a basketball game since March, like, I'm expecting him to be noticeably better. And if that growth happens on the defensive end, all the better for Minnesota. But like, honestly, when I picked them for 11, a lot of it is just like they just added the number one pick to their roster. Anthony Edwards, like, a freak talent. If he's good, what does that mean? They also never really played. Like, so much was made of the Cat D'Angelo Russell partnership. Those two played in one game together against the Toronto Raptors. And I went back and I rewatched that game a little while ago for something else. And I don't know, their chemistry just seemed very natural and organic on the offensive end. And their pick and roll has potential to be absolutely devastating with how Cat plays and how good he is as a roller and how deadly he is as a popper. So I like that. I'm just intrigued to see what it is. And then you add Rubio and the way that he just infuses confidence in all of his teammates everywhere he goes. I don't know. I mean, like, it's a deep team, even though, like, the depth isn't, like, veteran leadership or anything like that, but like having Jarrett Culver, who was this he's like completely forgotten now, and Jarrett Culver like had some moments out of a role that is probably best suited for him as a rookie where he showed that he could be pretty good someday. So I'm just really fascinated to kind of see where this team ends up, and I mean, internally they seem to have very high expectations for themselves, so maybe that's just rubbing off on me a little bit.
Yeah, look, Culver's the kind of guy I would love to see make a big leap because he was pretty meh as a rookie. I think what I'm worried about is he's best with the ball in his hands. He kind of wants to be almost like a pseudo point forward. That's how he played in college. And I'm not sure the ball is really going to be in his hands that much. I mean, maybe you give it to him in a second unit, right? So it's whenever you stagger his minutes, I guess, with D'Angelo, and you try to keep him involved that way. I mean, that could be fun, but that's also probably limiting his ceiling as a player if that's sort of the way you're deploying him. I'm not totally sure these pieces fit. I've been betting against Russell for 5 years, and I'm going to make it 6. and I'm also, frankly, just worried about Towns. I hear what you're saying about the long offseason for him, but I mean, this guy suffered more personal tragedy than almost anyone, and I think he had the exact right message when he came back for Media Day and was saying, look, this is, you know, basketball is not going to be some refuge for me. This has been, you know, a horribly tragic year. I think he said he lost a total of 7 family members. Who could blame him if he was away from basketball for a lot of that time? And so I'm saying keep the expectations off Karl-Anthony Towns. Just be respectful of what he's gone through. I'm saying Russell can't guard anyone, and Rubio's not going to be able to guard both guards. And I am hopeful that their offensive chemistry is what you've described, but I look at their wing core, and they've got a lot of options, but not a lot of great options. That's sort of how I look at it. I still think, you know, these guys are a year or two away, in my opinion. So I'm lower on them than you are. I probably have them down around 13th, probably. I think a team like San Antonio could finish above them. But we'll see. All right, we've run through the West pretty thoroughly here, Michael. I just, as a one final question, of the 6 teams that you listed, Houston, Golden State, Phoenix, Dallas, New Orleans, Minnesota. So those are kind of the fringe bubble conversation teams. Can any of them win a playoff series in the Western Conference, right? Because we've got some, you know, pretty big-time teams, the Lakers, Clippers, obviously at the top. You know, we're looking at maybe Denver coming back, Utah being pretty deep and solid, Portland being pretty deep and solid. Can any of those teams you described win a playoff series in the first round, and which teams have the best chance?
I think most of them can, actually. That's just how, like, how tight the Western Conference is. Like, if Houston does not make any trades, i.e. they keep James Harden, I have them, they could win a playoff series. I for sure think that Dallas can win a playoff series if they get in, because they have Luka, and by then Kristaps Porzingis, it will hopefully be healthy, and that duo is terrifying. I think, you know, Golden State, I could see them, it would be, it would take like a magical experience for them to win a playoff series, given, you know, some of their issues on the defensive end when the game slows down a little bit and teams can really focus in, or whoever they're playing will really focus in on Curry. But it's not impossible. And then like Phoenix, if Phoenix just like hits the ground running and just looks like everyone on that team took a collective leap and Chris Paul is healthy, then yeah, I think that Phoenix can also win a playoff series.
I think Dallas has a shot. The other 5, I'm shaky on. That's how I look at it. And I don't want to be a super top-down guy, but you know, we talked about some of these questions here. I think all of them, all these teams face pretty serious limiting factors. And, you know, for me, the difference would be Luka and the ceiling of Dallas's offense. I mean, they proved they could operate at a really high level for parts of that first round series against the Clippers. If they got an easier first round opponent, can Luka just blow a team off the court? I suppose it's possible. You can make the same argument for Curry as well. I just think he's working with less in Golden State. But I don't see Houston winning a series this year at all. Minnesota, definitely not. New Orleans, I think it's a little bit too early. So, and Phoenix, you could almost talk me into Phoenix having a shot if Chris Paul and Devin Booker are absolutely perfect together and completely locked in. I'm not totally sure that's going to happen either. So I think at the end of the day, I'm saying Dallas has the best shot from this group to win a playoff series, and we will have to check back in like 9 months to see who's right. All right, Michael, let's switch gears to the Eastern Conference. Got to say, not quite as intriguing of a pack here, but give me your 6, 7, and 8, your last 3 in the playoffs, and then give me your 9, 10, and 11, your first 3 out of the playoffs.
Sure. So 6, I have the Miami Heat, 7, Indiana Pacers, 8, the Atlanta Hawks, 9, the Charlotte Hornets, 10, the Washington Wizards, and 11, the Orlando Magic.
So you're a little bit down on Miami, the Eastern Conference champions, having them come in at 6th. Was that just sort of a process of elimination thing where you were like, well, we got to give KD respect, we got to give Giannis respect, we got to give you know, Philly's upgraded roster some respect. Of course you're going to have Boston, probably 1 or 2. Is that what happened? Is that how you got Miami at 6, probably showing some respect to Nick Nurse and the Raptors? Or was there something else holding them back? Are you worried about Dragic's foot, some of the offseason changes, just natural regression? What would it be?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to get too high on what they accomplished in the bubble while simultaneously not taking away from them their great run. So, like, I just, you know, I don't know if they're able to, throughout an entire regular season, just play Bam at the five, especially without Jay Crowder, who is in Phoenix now. And he's one of those stretch fours who is really difficult to just batter down in the post. So he can guard kind of multiple positions that way. Like, I don't know who's going to be, what their starting lineup is going to look like, but if you just kind of slide Mo Harkless into that role, it's just a different, it's a different composition in the defensive end. So, Jimmy Butler, who's a year older now and who just like took Lord knows how many months/years off of his career after what he did in the finals. He played a significantly differently in the playoffs than he did during the regular season. He shot the three ball a lot better. He was more aggressive offensively. I was actually looking up some numbers on him in Second Spectrum, and like, he was one of the worst pick and roll scorers when a defender went under the screen during the regular season. And then when a defender went under the screen in the playoffs, he was one of the best scorers. So I think, like, where is he going to be next season, and how does that impact them on the offensive end? And like,
it's a great point. Jimmy was over his head. I mean, he played amazing in the bubble. It's the best stretch of basketball I've ever seen him play. From a timeliness standpoint, but also from a, you know, whenever he needed to make a big shot, he hit the big shots, right? I mean, there was multiple times where series were sort of wavering, whether it's a Celtics series, whether it's that Bucks series, was not quite wavering as much, but he was the guy to put the opponent away, and he was always making kind of big play after big play after big play. And I think you're right. Over the course of a 72-game season, throwing back the travel, maybe throw in some exhaustion factor just from these guys being on the quick turnaround and not having the luxury of resting their stars maybe quite as much as a team like the Lakers will, I think it's fair to say that they're going to come back to earth. I mean, I don't think you're being disrespectful with the six, although if I was a Heat fan, I'd probably hate you.
That's understandable. I mean, everybody hates me. But no, I mean, like, you know, there's some other data out there that just suggests that Duncan Robinson could come back to earth a little bit as an outside shooter. I mean, some of the shots that he hit last season are just, I mean, he's a great shooter, but if he does what he did again for an entire season, he's basically the best shooter who ever lived. And I real quick, like, I have a question for you. Just what is their starting five in your opinion? Like, does Tyler Hero get a starting nod? Is he the starting two man? Is Kendrick Nunn back in the starting five and they move Goran back to the bench as they did during the last year's regular season? Are they going to play Myers Leonard, who, I mean, he re-signed there. And like, if you're Myers Leonard, do you re-sign in Miami if you know that you're basically not going to play? Or like, did they tell you,
well,
yeah, we're going to,
I mean, go? Look, if you're Myers Leonard and you're seeing the size of the money that they offered him, you're not thinking twice. You're like, whatever, you know, I'll be inactive the whole season. Give me that 9.5. Here's the thing. Your point on Butler being a different guy from an offensive standpoint in the bubble versus the regular season is a key one. I think it actually translates to a lot of their other players. Like, Tyler Hero had some amazing moments in the bubble, but his rookie year was much shakier, right? Had some awesome highs, but also lots of lows. You look at Goran Dragic, I mean, off the bench, as you're describing, during the regular season, comes to the bubble, now he's a starter. I mean, they really shook things up when they got down there. And so for Miami, just to say, hey, we're running it back and we're going to have the same look as we did in the bubble, that to me is a question mark, right? Does it work for an entire regular season? And then, you know, did you discover all these things that worked in the bubble, and will those still be sustainable answers? Open questions, in my opinion. You know, if I'm starting, I would probably have Hero as a super sub at this point. And I would probably try to start Harkless at that four spot in place of Crowder. So I would go Dragic, Robinson, Butler, Harkless, Bam. Would you disagree? Mm-hmm.
That's not bad. I mean, playing Bam at the five is not terrible. Obviously, he's incredible. He's one of the best defensive players in basketball.
I think you have to. I mean, I think that's sort of the way the league is going. You look around the East. I mean, they're not going to be contending with that many amazing centers in the Eastern Conference. I think he has a chance to be Defensive Player of the Year this year. And I think you're trying to work Bam into his long-term role, right? And I don't think you necessarily need to protect him. He's pretty physical. He did have some injury issues in the bubble, which are a little bit nerve-wracking. But why can't he just be the full-time every night center backline guy? I'm wiping out every shot at the hoop, and I'm facilitating on offense and scoring a little bit too. I think if you want him to become his full self, you play him at the five all the time.
No, I mean, like, I'm not going to totally disagree with that. I'm also interested to see, you know, is Avery Bradley a starter on this team? You know, they sign him, and he just always makes more sense to me in a starting five than coming off the bench. So I don't know, like,
yeah, I gotta say, he's making increasingly less sense to me. You know, I'm not sure how much he's got left. Maybe that's rude, but I think he's
a couple.
Yeah, I mean, he's a couple years removed from the good old days in Boston, and I just think, you know, it's his success has been very context dependent. Like, he was terrible for the Clippers. All of a sudden, he plays with LeBron. His numbers start to look a little bit better. I would just say, I would be trusting more in Duncan Robinson trying to become this elite knockdown every night 3-point shooting guy than I would be Avery Bradley. I mean, he would be my priority for sure if I was Miami.
Yeah, no, I can see that as well. Plus the rookie Precious Achiuwa. I hope I'm pronouncing his last name correctly. If he enters the rotation as just kind of whatever he is, I don't know, because I didn't really watch him play too much in college. But I think that, yeah, they've added some athleticism. They've added a little bit of skill. But I think they'll miss Crowder at the end of the day. And when they want to play Bam at the five, it could be interesting.
Well, he shot like 45% from threes for them. I didn't realize what a big drastic increase it was. It was like 29% before the trade and 45% after the trade, something ridiculous like that. So, yeah, they're going to miss anybody who just doesn't miss shots for sure.
There are some things that are too good to keep a secret, like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith. When I'm not at my day job, First Take, you can find me in my studio hosting the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, at the very least, as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and politics. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions on those nauseating Cowboy fans, the chaos in Washington, D.C., and trending topics on social media, as well as my straight shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers. And I occasionally give out love advice. Yes, it's true. If you want to know my true feelings about something, I'll give it to you straight. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
Let's move to Indiana. I mean, they get shortchanged in these conversations a lot. I'm glad you still have them as a playoff team. I think that they've been getting too much negative buzz. You know, they don't get discussed a lot, and the little drama between Oladipo and Miles Turner is a little bit sensational, and people get all worked up about it. They did have the coaching change. I mean, it was a strange offseason for them, to say the least, but they should be better than they were last year, I would say, with Oladipo coming back. You've got Brogdon already there. You've got Sabonis established as a player. They've got, you know, TJ Warren playing better and, you know, comfortable in a role. I mean, they almost have, in some senses, too many guys. You know, it's a lot of mouths to feed. That could be a part of the problem. They've also got a lot of defensive talent. I think they were a top five defensive team last year. They're still in the playoffs. Like, I know people want to freak out and say, Oladipo, madness. Oh, God, he's going to, you know, freak out. He's going to ruin the locker room. Like, first of all, you know, everyone's going to have a weird season this year traveling around. There's going to be a lot of grudges and everything else when you're stuck with your teammates, 72 games, no fans, and, you know, no partying on the road, right? I think just take it down a notch from that. Look at their talent base and their balanced players. You know, they got a lot of guys who play both ways. And you could say this team should be solid, you know, unspectacular, solid, back in the playoffs, just like always. Do you agree?
Well, I do. That's why I have them number seven. I mean, the big positive for me is that they have better continuity than any other team in the league. But at the same time, I think that you could argue that they also have a little bit of upside in that their starting five, their projected starting five for this upcoming season, only played 86 minutes last year and were had a plus 10.3 net rating when they took the floor. So basically that's just you're adding Victor Oladipo to that group. That's a really nice variable to have on your side. I do think, though, Ben, that, like, putting Miles Turner so publicly in trade rumors, like that never really goes over well. And I mean, he's been in trade rumors for a while, basically almost since he signed that contract with them, or at least since Sabonis kind of broke out and was clearly the best five on the team. Like that combined with, like, I do put stock in some of the reports about Victor Oladipo and the fact that he will be playing for a new contract, which is a big deal. And he will be playing to reestablish himself as an all-NBA caliber player, potentially more so than trying to fit into the successful schemes that Indiana had last season with Brogdon really running the show. So those are some of my questions about them. But I think it is a good thing, ultimately, just in terms of shaking it up, that they switch things at the head coach position. Because, you know, playing really slow, playing really big, focusing on a brand of basketball that is increasingly antiquated, like, I hope that they kind of shake things up a little bit and that helps them also on both ends.
Yeah, I mean, at the same time, like, it worked for them. They were kind of cutting against the grain, and I don't know. I still don't understand why they got rid of Nate McMillan. I wish we had a better explanation on that. Maybe it was financial, and, you know, who knows? But, you know, I think if they're going to try to play the same way everybody else plays, then they really have to hope Oladipo is back to being that vibrant, you know, all-NBA level guard on the ball who's, you know, hitting big shots and blowing by people going to the basket and is just sort of this, not a one-man offense, but a really impactful offensive player because, you know, their approach is just more, we do have to grind it out. We've got to start with our defense. We've got to, share the basketball, keep it moving, get balanced scoring attack from all five positions. Every once in a while, just hope that TJ Warren goes crazy. And then otherwise, just kind of play a controlled game. And that's exactly what Brogdon wants to do. I think that's where Sabonis fits in too. If they're, you know, shaking things up, you know, dramatically, I want to see how that goes for them. But I think that they're probably going to stick to how they've been playing, or at least close to it, I would hope. The new coach comes from Toronto, though, right? So you're expecting a little bit more pizzazz from the Raptors lineage?
Yeah, I mean, a little bit more variance and unpredictability and versatility. That would be nice. I know that you are restricted by the roster and the fact that you do have these two bigs, and playing them together really limits you, particularly, I guess, on both ends, actually, in most matchups. Like, who guards Kevin Durant when you play the Brooklyn Nets and he's at the four? Like, it's just, it's the issues are the issues.
Here's my thing on Turner. Like, you know, I hear what you're saying. Should he be, you know, nervous or looking over his shoulder after all this trade talk? Is he going to be upset about it? My message to him, and I say this lovingly because he's a fellow Lego head, you know, Michael, he really loves the Legos just like I do. But if you don't want to be in trade rumors, you got to average better than 12-6, right? And I think if you come in as a lottery guy and people think you're going to be a franchise center and you show some, you know, potential defensive player of the year type impact, you get ahead of yourself a little bit. And you start to think, okay, like, I'm one type of player, but you're not that guy. You know, I think that Sabonis definitely was better than him, like you mentioned. And, you know, you got to show some competitiveness and earn back your reputation a little bit. And if you're 12-6 on a big contract and, you know, the team can get by without you necessarily as its centerpiece guy, like, what do you expect? You know, everybody's tradable in the NBA. So hopefully he understands that. Hopefully they're able to keep the personalities together. I do think Oladipo here is the wild card in all of it, right? And how does he reestablish himself? Is he able to say, okay, I'm a second or a third option? Is he so good he can go back and be their number one option? This team's final product could look a lot different depending on where he settles in. And he was pretty bad in the bubble, and he was pretty bad after the injury last year, and it's been a while since he's been that big impact player. But also more time has passed, and hopefully he's coming back with a fresh mindset, and a contract year push, you know, is all the motivation in the world that he could ask for. All right, let's breeze through these last couple. You have got Atlanta in the playoffs. Why Atlanta over Charlotte, Washington, Orlando? Is it faith in Trae Young? What other factors are you considering?
It's faith in Trae Young. It's faith in their depth. It's faith in their offseason signings, Bogdanovic and Danilo Gallinari. It's John Collins taking a step forward, assuming they don't trade him. It's Clint Capella being able to provide a little bit of defensive resistance at the rim and really fit into a switch sometimes scheme if they want to do that. I mean, I think that Trae Young was sensational last year offensively. He has not played in forever. I expect him to be even better and more efficient, particularly with the offensive weapons that are now around him. And also, there are other young players on this roster who should be better. Cam Reddish, Kevin Huerter, DeAndre Hunter. So, like, if everybody takes a step forward collectively, and, you know, there's a lot of internal competition on this roster for minutes, which can be a good thing. I think that the talent is at a level where if you don't make the playoffs, it's a very big disappointment.
I think it's going to happen. I think that 8 might be their ceiling, Michael. I think they're getting ahead of themselves. I think they're starting from a very low baseline last year. They've definitely made improvements, but they're, you know, being asked to jump up an awful long way into that number 8 seed, into that playoff picture. I'm not sure they're going to be able to do it, and I think that there's going to be a lot of people looking around trying to say, well, what happened? I'm selling on Danilo Gallinari. I think that he was awesome last year. I can understand why they paid him. I think he's going to come back just a little bit. I don't know how Collins fits. I think Bogdanovic is solid but doesn't guard anyone. I mean, this team's defense is going to be horrible, and they've got a lot to prove on offense as well. And so I think that you've got them in the right range, but I've got them just maybe a step or two back from that 8th seed. And they're going to be one of the teams we should be, you know, circling back on every month, just check in and take their temperature, because how do expectations influence just kind of like what happens going forward, right? If they do fall short here, if they make progress but not enough progress, how do the key players from Trae Young to Coach Lloyd Pierce, would he get in the hot seat, you know, potentially if they're not in the playoff picture? How does ownership respond after spending all of that money? I think it's a little bit, it's like kind of a low-key pressure cooker for Atlanta right now, don't you think?
Well, first of all, if you take their temperature every couple months, I mean, it's just going to be 1,500 degrees. Like, they're just going to be incredible offensively, red hot. So, secondly, who is your 8 seed? I'm curious if you don't have Atlanta there.
Man, I might regret saying this, and I probably already regret thinking it. Washington. You know, I think Washington's going to get by them because I think that Washington is going to be able to have some, you know, real firepower offensively as well. When you're talking about Beal and Westbrook and then, you know, shooting. And then I think defensively they're going to be terrible as well, but I think slightly less terrible. And I think you're going to get a bump from Westbrook going from the Western Conference to the Eastern Conference. I think Beal is going to come in motivated and rested. I mean, he didn't even go to the bubble, so he's got no excuse. He should be his absolute best self. And I believe in those guys that are a little bit more proven than Atlanta's pieces. And I think that, you know, both these teams are going to be terrible. You know, this is my least favorite aspect of the entire league, is trying to pin down which of these like 6, 7, 8, 9 seed teams in the Eastern Conference are we going to waste our time talking about, because none of them are ever going to win a series. But I'll take Washington over Atlanta right now.
You are such a dark cloud right now. I knew it was gonna. I knew it was gonna get to this when we started talking about the Eastern Conference. But like,
come on. Look at Atlanta's record last year. It's so unspeakable. I can't even say it on this podcast. Let's talk about Charlotte for a minute. Speaking of dark clouds, I don't know if you saw the coverage of LaMelo Ball during the first preseason game. where I saw a graphic that had him next to Magic Johnson, LeBron James, and everyone else. And because he had thrown that incredible behind the back pass in transition. And it just absolutely kills me, Michael. It's unfair to LaMelo. It's unfair to every single one of these legends he's getting thrown into. This guy went 0-for-5 and didn't score coming off of the bench in his first preseason game. Now, granted, he didn't get waived from the roster like his brother, LiAngelo. He's still on the Hornets. But he's not Magic Johnson because he threw one behind-the-back pass in transition during a meaningless preseason game in an empty building. This conversation around LaMelo needs to just chill out. It's even worse than the Lonzo conversation was. I'll admit I got way too caught up in the Lonzo conversation when he was coming out during Summer League as well. Mm-hmm. We got to pump the brakes on the LaMelo hype. It's just absolutely out of control, Michael. Do you agree?
So I actually watched that game, and I mean, LaMelo Ball could be one of those players that actually makes his team better, or one of those players who kind of tricks you into believing he's making his team better because of just how seductive those passes that he makes are. But like that, I mean, the behind the back one was just so smooth, man. You got
He had three awesome passes, but there's more to basketball than three awesome passes. They lost by like 20 points, right?
No, not in my book, there isn't. No, just kidding. But like the over-the-head dime that he dropped to Cody Zeller on the pick and roll was ridiculous. That full court touchdown pass to I forget who for the layup was great. But like, I don't know. I guess I'm just saying that like LaMelo is fun and will be fun. The jury is definitely still out on how much better he makes everyone around him. And you have to be able to score if you want to have the ball in your hands as much as he surely will.
How does the jury feel about the Magic comparisons?
I mean, that's obviously ludicrous.
Thank you. That's all. I just need to have all the Hall of Famers not mentioned with LaMelo Ball for this entire season, okay?
Can I ask you a quick question, though? Another comparison? Do you think that by the end of this year, he will be a better passer than Ben Simmons?
Wow. Look, he makes a lot of really impressive highlight passes, but there's more to passing than that. I'll take Ben Simmons as a passer over LaMelo Ball.
Okay, interesting. I mean, if Ben Simmons hits corner three shooters like basically better than anyone, and he's huge and he's really strong and he draws help and all that. And so I'll need to see LaMelo be able to kind of draw to and just make the simple reads before I say that he's better than Simmons.
Exactly right. Just make your teammates better, have a functional offense, be the head of the snake. It's not just about the highlight level passes. Everyone on Twitter falls in love with those hit ahead passes that he makes in transition too. Newsflash, those never, ever work in games that matter, right? Lonzo was trying to do that for a couple years, and it's always a fun, novel act. That's not how you're going to win playoff basketball games. I just wish, as a society, we valued players that chase wins, not clout. That's all I'm going to say. It's not his fault. He's just out there trying to play the game his way, and I think the media complex around him is just like so geared up to try to tell a particular story about him. And I think it's unfair to him, like I said, and unfair to the other players who he's getting mentioned with. And I just encourage restraint from all parties. You're going to look back at this and just say, God, did we really compare him to Magic Johnson after one preseason game in which he didn't score and lost by 20 and didn't even start? It's just crazy. Anyway, now I sound like a grump like you're describing. I think Charlotte should be interesting. Why do you have them just outside the playoffs? So you could make the case you've got one of the best wings in the conference if he's healthy in Gordon Hayward. You've got a number of backcourt players. I know you're a big Devontae Graham guy. Maybe the interior rotation is not the best, but they had a good, hardworking culture last year, and they seem to buy into what their coach is selling. So why are they missing out?
No, I mean, there's a lot of things to like. I expect them to be a little bit more inventive than some other teams. James Borrego he's talked about starting PJ Washington at the five quite a bit, and the way he used PJ last year in post-up situations where he was able to kind of take advantage of smaller defenders and be really efficient with it could kind of recreate itself in this upcoming season in his second year. I think that Devontae Graham will not have the ball in his hands like nearly as much with LaMelo Ball and with Gordon Hayward on the roster. I mean, how will Terry Rozier respond to being a fourth or fifth option after finishing last year second in usage and being their big free agent signing So, like, there's just some questions here, and I don't think the talent level is super high. No disrespect to Gordon, but he is injury prone, so I'm kind of anticipating him to miss some time, and I'm factoring that in here as well.
No, I'm with you on that. That's the deal breaker to me. Like, I just don't think he can carry a playoff team at this point of his career. Prove me wrong, no. Gordo. Prove me wrong, but I don't see it. So I think you're maybe even a little bit optimistic. Like, I definitely would have Washington above Charlotte here as well. Mm-hmm. And you could even convince me Orlando above Charlotte too. What is holding Washington out of the playoffs in your eyes, Michael?
Defense. Like, it's defense, and it's just, what is Russell Westbrook going to look like, and how will everyone around Russell Westbrook respond to playing with Russell Westbrook? Those are the two big questions. And actually, I don't even think defense is a question. We know that it's going to be terrible. There is absolutely no reason why it'll be better than it was last year. So making the playoffs with the 29th, maybe 30th defense in the NBA, maybe they'll be a tiny bit better than that, is really difficult. And, you know, Brad Beal all of a sudden playing with a guy whose usage is going to be above 30, how does Brad Beal respond when... I mean, he clearly is, you know, he wants to be recognized for his abilities. He was very upset when he did not make the All-Star team last year. He did not make an All-NBA team despite averaging 30 a night. So, like, how will they coexist together? I think that that's a big question mark. And then, like, you know, there's a lot of, there's just some depth issues on this team, particularly on the wing, particularly on the defensive end.
So. No, you're being very polite. They're just bad. They got a lot of bad players. There's not really any way around it. And what about this argument? You know, Atlanta's going to struggle when Trey's off the court, right? They don't have enough playmaking without him. If you always have Beal and Wall and you stagger their minutes, you've always got one of them, does the offense wind up being a little bit steadier? Can you keep Beal happy? And then can you generate enough scoring to overcome the terrible defense? Like, I kind of think Atlanta and Washington are almost like the Spider-Man meme, you know, pointing at each other, all offense, no defense, not really that good, probably not worth talking about as much as we do. But I don't know. I think that Washington's just going to be a little bit more stable. And I also think, you know, I'm Westbrook's one of his biggest critics probably, or biggest skeptics, but you match him up against the other point guards in the Eastern Conference, his life just got so much easier. And there's a lot of teams he's going to be able to stack up big points against. I think he's just going to look like the best version of himself more consistently in the East than he did last year, or really at any other point of his career.
Maybe. I think individually he could have a lot of success for sure. And you make a really good point about staggering the minutes, even though their head coach is Scott Brooks. And last time Scott Brooks was Russell Westbrook's head coach, he was not staggering Westbrook with the other team's best player, so we'll see if he learned anything.
Well, he might just play them both 46 minutes a night. I mean, that's also a possibility, because, you know, he's kind of coaching for his job, I would say, at this point. You know, he's played Beal an awful lot of minutes at various points of his career, even during seasons that were sort of essentially lost. Now that I think about it, yeah, they're going to stagger the 3 minutes of rest those guys get at different times, and then otherwise it's just going to be them two versus the world.
Yeah, so that's going to be really interesting to see how that all plays out. But, like, also, what do those lineups look like when it's just Russell Westbrook on the floor? And do you have enough shooting around him? They have some bigs who can shoot, for sure. Thomas Bryant hit over 40% of his threes last year, which really surprised me when I went back and looked it up.
Last time, man. The offense and the spacing is actually going to be okay. Just Thomas Bryant, I mean, that's the thing. Like, as pretty as the ball goes in from beyond the arc from Thomas Bryant's head is as ugly as the defense gets when people just go right by him for baskets after baskets after baskets, right? Like, it's that constant trade-off. Can you score enough to outweigh how much you're giving up? And he's just in that conundrum. That's like the Thomas Bryant affair, if you want to call it that. It's just like, can you score more than you're conceding?
Is that like the Thomas Crown affair?
That's where I was going with that, but I realized halfway through that it didn't really land.
It just doesn't make any sense. Yeah, no, I love it, though. I love the attempt. The thing, real quick, just comparing Washington with Atlanta, like, I guess I'm, you know, you said that when Trae Young sits, they'll fall off a cliff. I don't think that they will fall off a cliff anymore. Like, last year they did, for sure. But
is this, like, Rondo belief?
No, I mean, a little bit is Rondo belief versus someone like, you know, Ish Smith or Raul Neto. Like, I think that Rondo, he's just a really good backup point guard at this point in his career when he's surrounded by, I think, the lineup choices that they'll have to make with, you know, he's going to be with Gallinari a lot, I would assume, because Gallo's going to be coming off the bench as well. He's going to be with DeAndre Hunter and Cam Reddish and Kevin Huerter and a lot of really exciting upcoming wings who can shoot the ball a little bit. So, like, I think that they're, like, also, like, if you stagger Bogdan, too, and Bogdan can handle the ball. So I think there's a little bit more versatility with Atlanta, and it's, like, the hierarchy isn't as clear as it is in Washington, where Westbrook's going to be doing everything when he's on the floor without Beal. And Beal is going to be doing a lot when he's on the floor without Westbrook. And it's going to be a question mark when they're both together. So that's just kind of why I think I have Atlanta a little bit higher. But I think both their defenses are going to be atrocious.
No, you're making strong arguments. I mean, Atlanta has more quality players on their roster at this point than Washington does, for sure. They need the good Rondo. If they get the good Rondo, you can talk me into what you're describing. If they get the bad Rondo, the Sacramento Kings Rondo, you know,
if it's a good Rondo, just give that man his third ring. That's how I feel.
Okay, all right. Slow it down. I was going to ask you which of these teams in a minute had the chance to win a playoff series, but now you're predicting Atlanta to win four playoff series. Perfect.
Yes.
Last one here is Orlando. What holds them out? Why are they falling back so far? I mean, you've got them all the way down at 11 compared to last year. Is it the Isaac injury? Is it just the stasis? Is it because you're frustrated they still haven't traded Aaron Gordon? You're punishing them. I mean, losing DJ Augustin, I guess, would be a blow by their standards. Maybe not by any other team's standards, but what's got you down so far on Orlando?
A little bit of spite went into this decision. Like, their general malaise as an organization, I find offensive, and I really didn't like their offseason. I know I've said it a million times, and I apologize to any Orlando Magic fans who are listening, but, like, where are you going this season?
No apology necessary. They should be glad you're calling them out, don't you think? I mean, if you're a Magic fan and you're sitting here thinking, okay, we're running it back with Vucevic, Gordon, no Isaac, Fournier, and we're going to try to have Markel Fultz as our guy now, how are you excited by that? Aren't you just, you know, beside yourself saying, we didn't get anybody, we didn't make any moves, we didn't shake anything up, we just lost our best point guard, basically, and that was it?
It's devastating, honest. I would be devastated if I was a Magic fan. I want to see them go the other way desperately. I want to see Cole Anthony get a lot of minutes. I want to see basically them be a little bit patient, knowing that Isaac will be back eventually. I mean, what's really sad is, like, Mo Bamba, who had coronavirus back when the bubble first started, is still not 100% recovered from it, and he's spoken about all the issues that he has had trying to get back to 100%. So, like, I don't know what you can expect from him throughout this season either. But, like, yeah, it's just like you re-signed Terrence Ross, you re-signed Vucevic, you still have Aaron Gordon, you're not trading him. I just don't know what they're doing. And so I could totally see them getting the 8th seed. That's like this team was built to get the 8th seed, so great. And then they'll just get destroyed in the first round. So I just didn't even want to give them that credit, and I want them to lose. I don't want them to make the playoffs because it's not right, honestly. I don't like it. When you're just trying to, you're aiming low, it's a disservice to your fan base, honestly.
Your best take of the whole podcast, Michael. I'm with you 1,000%. You've talked me into them. Maybe we can say you overrated them. Maybe they could be even worse than 11. That's possible. You know, I think that their margin for being really, really bad is pretty thin here. You know, I mean, I think that they definitely took a step back from a roster standpoint compared to last year. The stasis stuff comes into effect where, you know, guys start to get a little bored and antsy. Maybe they have to shake things up at the deadline and just sell off if they start slow. I could see that happening. I'm right there with you. I think you know, this could be a really disappointing season for a franchise that's usually just kind of meh. I think they could be worse than meh this year. Okay, last question for you as the wrap-up, Michael. Miami, Indiana, Atlanta, Charlotte, Washington, Orlando. Of those six teams, how many can win a playoff series?
It's a really good question.
I think we can agree Miami for sure. I mean,
yes,
you know,
of course.
They're in. Can any of these other teams win a playoff series? I don't see Indiana. I don't see Atlanta. I don't see Charlotte. I don't see Washington. I don't see Orlando winning a playoff series this year. I think that the top six in the East is looking pretty nice. They're sitting pretty, right? And if you're a top four seed, if you've got home court, pencil it into the conference semifinals, right?
I think maybe you could make an argument for Indiana. If everything goes right for Indiana and they head into the playoffs humming and whoever their first-round opponent is suffers some kind of devastating injury, then I think you can say that Indiana can win a playoff series. But like with these other ones, like I don't see it at all. And like a lot of them would just be so thrilled to get into the playoffs that yeah, once they get there, there's just not a lot of upside for them. So like I'll put Indiana in there as potentially I could conceivably see them winning a playoff series. But like the real answer is that Miami is the only one who I mean, I would probably favor Miami depending on who they're up against. Like I'd probably put them as a favorite in their first round series.
Okay, I am right there with you. And now here's my last question. If we're leaving teams like Dallas, New Orleans at home in the West, right? And we're saying that Indiana, Atlanta, none of these other teams have a chance in the Eastern Conference. Should the NBA, and I know I bang this drum every year, should they have just taken the top 16 playoff teams regardless of conference? Or should they have tried to work in a lack of conference into the play-in rounds, right? So that the 9 and 10 seeds were maybe included regardless of conference just to make sure they had the best possible teams. Because you're writing off the 7 and 8 seed right off the top in the Eastern Conference. Are we sure if your 9 and 10 seeds, Dallas, New Orleans, if they had a chance, are we sure that they wouldn't outperform Miami and Indiana or Atlanta out there in the East?
I think in a time of economic peril, if Luka Doncic and Zion Williamson are on the outside looking in on the playoffs,
yes,
the NBA is just going to change the rules on the fly. That's just what you kind of need to do. Like it's at the end of the day, it's like a business and it's an entertainment product. And
it's crazy they didn't change the rules already. I mean, like they're kind of trying to do it with the play-in round, but it should have been just top 16 this year. I mean, it should have been top 16 for the last 25 years. I'm going to say that, but this is the time to do it. You're right. The economic argument is stronger than ever. The travel concerns thing, I mean, who knows what the playoffs are going to look like this year, but I would have been interested in trying to make accommodations there as well. And I also think if you're the owners, you're staring down billions of dollars in losses. It's time to forget about tradition and do what's in the best interest of the sport. Get the best teams and the best players out there in the playoffs and let them try to generate revenue rather than just, you know, we're looking at the 1-8 and the 2-7 in the Eastern Conference as being worthless. And you've already written them off before the season started, Michael, and you like the Eastern Conference. That feels to me like a fundamental problem, doesn't it?
It does. No doubt about it. I think we're on the same page here.
Oh, I love it. I love it when we can agree, Michael. Well, thank you very much for Pina's playoff picks. Guys, now you know what time it is. It's your time to rip Michael apart. Email us, openfloormail@gmail.com, openfloormail@gmail.com. Michael, you and I were very different. Other than maybe Atlanta, other than maybe Houston and Dallas, a couple other teams, we were on a similar page, but I'm sure there's people out there, like maybe some Grizzlies fans, who are saying, wait a minute, we can't even get a name check. What's going on there? Email in your best arguments to us about why we snubbed your team, why we were too high on a team, why we were too low on a team, whatever it might be. This is going to be where the action is this season. I'm pretty convinced that we're going to be watching this 6 through 11 race all season long, Michael. All right, guys, follow us on Apple Podcasts by searching for Open Floor. That's two words. When you find our page, scroll down. It will say rate and review. Tap 5 stars. It's just that easy to help us spread the word. Now, Michael's on Twitter and Instagram at Michael V as in Victor. Pina, be sure to give him a shout out and say congratulations for joining Sports Illustrated. What an exciting time to be alive, Michael. I'm on Instagram at Ben.Golliver, on Twitter at Ben Golliver. Until later this week, Michael, I will talk to you.
Talk soon, Ben.
There are some things that are too good to keep a secret, like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events.
With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.